Good morning. You're tuned in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, we'll hear about a new initiative just announced yesterday by Denver Mayor Michael Hancock that the city of Denver will provide safe outdoor camping spaces for those experiencing homelessness during the COVID-19 pandemic. Then, Boulder voters may be asked this November whether they want to join cities such as Denver and Fort Collins and choose their mayor on the fall ballot rather than have other council members make the choice. We'll have more coming up. John Lendorf will join us for the latest food news. That's on Radio Nibbles. Then after headlines from the BBC, Liz Lane speaks with UK economist Vicky Price. She's the author of the 2012 book Greekonomics, which was about the sovereign debt crisis in Europe. But her new book is Women versus Capitalism. It's a frank look at the contradiction that's inherent in capitalism's promotion of efficient and optimally profitable markets, with women's persistent unequal treatment thereunder. At 9 o'clock, we'll continue our ongoing series on water issues, Connecting the Drops. Today, Sam Fuqua looks at the infrastructure of our water system, the reservoirs that store it, the treatment plants that clean it, and the pipes that deliver it. These are the fundamental parts of our water systems, and there are almost 6 million people in Colorado. The vast majority of us depend on a local water utility and its infrastructure to deliver clean drinking water to our homes and to take dirty water and sewage away. Well, it is round-the-clock work to keep it flowing and to keep it clean. In this morning's edition of Connecting the Drops, we'll learn about some of the infrastructure challenges facing water systems, how we pay for it, and why those flushable wipes aren't really flushable. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Martha Luachamin has claimed victory in the Democratic primary for the District 2 Boulder County Commissioner race after unofficial results on Wednesday have indicated that she is leading by 3 percentage points. The other candidate in the race, State Representative Jonathan Singer, conceded the race in an email on Wednesday night. What you mean is a Longmont realtor and a former teacher. She'll be the first woman of colour to serve on the County Commissioner Board in Boulder. Earlier this year, she spoke with KGNU about the need for diversity in leadership.
Who is in leadership and who's using the lens of equity and access for everyone in the community? And I feel like that's really one of the big pieces that we keep going back to, and one of the conversation from the Resiliencia para Todos was talking about this critical need to incorporate cultural brokers into paths of leadership, into departments of human services, into not just frontline positions, but real management and leadership positions, because that's where the decisions get made, that's where the funding happen. And until we're able to do that, I think we're going to continue having some of these roadblocks of great intentions and definitely movement toward getting more equitable work done. But we're still going to have some gaps.
We'll hear more from Martha Luachamin on tomorrow's Morning Magazine on her historic victory in the Boulder County Commissioner race. The Colorado Supreme Court on Wednesday overturned Governor Polis's executive order allowing petition signature collection to be done by mail or email during the COVID-19 pandemic. The ruling means that signatures must be collected in the presence of a petition circulator. Wednesday's ruling overrides a lower court decision that upheld the order. The lawsuit challenging the executive order was brought by a coalition, including Colorado Concern, a group made up of wealthy business owners, and Dan Ritchie, the former University of Denver Chancellor and CEO at Westinghouse. When signing the executive order in May, Governor Polis said he didn't want the COVID-19 pandemic to be a barrier to democracy. The Supreme Court decision now creates extra barriers for several ballot initiatives seeking to get on November's ballot. This includes an initiative that was announced last week to increase setback distances from new oil and gas drilling. In a statement on Wednesday, Safe and Healthy Colorado, the coalition behind Initiative 174, said that the Supreme Court decision is a setback for the people of Colorado, our right to petition our government and the democratic process that should ensure safe and equal access to the ballot for all citizens, regardless of their means or the external threat of a pandemic. They added that they were determined to move forward with the issue. Another federal lawsuit has been filed against the city of Denver over policing of the recent anti-racism protests. The Denver Post reports that the class action suit filed on Wednesday alleges that police used constitutionally unlawful crowd control tactics, and these include kettling, indiscriminate and unwarned launching of tear gas and flashbangs into crowds and at individuals, as well as shooting projectiles at protesters. In the weather today, warm and sunny is the forecast, highs in the low 90s. Slightly breezy conditions coming up in the late afternoon. Tomorrow, similar temperatures and conditions, but a chance of afternoon thunderstorms on Friday. And for July 4th, it will be mostly sunny and warm, but showers are likely later in the day. It is 10 minutes past 8 o'clock. You're listening to KGNU. On Wednesday, Denver Mayor Michael Hancock announced the creation of outdoor camping areas in the city for those experiencing homelessness during the COVID-19 pandemic. The Colorado Village Collaborative, which operates the beloved community Tiny Home Village in Denver, has proposed a safe outdoor space concept to provide emergency support to people who are experiencing homelessness during the pandemic. I spoke with Kathleen Van Voorhees, who is the Congregation Land Campaign Manager with the Interfaith Alliance of Colorado, which is part of the Colorado Village Collaborative.
So the whole proposal came out of a collaborative of direct service providers, organizations, council members, as well as individuals in the community. The Interfaith Alliance of Colorado has been working in partnership directly with CVC to really do the fundraising, the contract collection, as well as really talk through site proposals, coming up with policy procedures. There's four major organizations that have actually done that. It's the Colorado Village Collaborative, Interfaith Alliance, Radian, who's a nonprofit architecture firm who's been assisting with all the zoning and the layout, as well as Showers for All, who have donated thousands of dollars of time, as well as they're going to be providing the laundry and shower trucks for the site. So we've all sort of came together to start looking at locations, and we've looked at everything from privatized sites to public sites, and we do have a short list and hope to be able to announce a site in the coming weeks.
Give us a sense of the need that we have right now around these type of spaces to allow those experiencing homelessness a safe and legal space to camp in Denver.
Sure. So, you know, before COVID, we were looking at about 5,000 homeless individuals. Post-COVID, that's really hard to track. We've seen hundreds of new homeless individuals in the city of Denver and around Colorado. That number is going to continue to grow. So, you know, we've seen multiple research studies that all indicate that we're going to see at a minimum a 45% increase in homelessness across the nation. Currently in Colorado, we're looking at about 300,000 individuals who are at risk of eviction. These are all glaring numbers at the fact that right now, while we see an increase, we're going to see an even exponential increase in the next few weeks as evictions roll out, and in the next few months as we continue to see those who are unable to be housed. And of course, if a second wave of COVID comes through, you know, we have a lot of individuals who are new to homelessness, who are new to camping on the street because they lost their job, because they were renting hotel rooms and could no longer pay that rent. For a multitude of reasons. There are congregate shelterings. There are some hotel rooms as well as apartments for those who are 65 and older or showing signs of COVID or recovering from COVID. The congregate shelters are wonderful. The male shelter has been serving at capacity, really, since it opened, which is unbelievable. That's about 600 to 650 men a night. The women's shelter has been serving anywhere from half capacity to about 75% capacity. But to be in a sheltering situation, we have a lot of individuals who don't qualify. So we have men who can't get in. We have couples who don't have a place to go. We have people with pets who also can't go inside. We have people with previous traumas who don't do well in a shelter setting. And we also have individuals who are really quite scared of getting COVID in a congregate setting. And those who really just don't do well inside. So there's such a multifaceted issue, but we're seeing such an increase now with homelessness that we have to be able to do something. Obviously, you know, this is a problem for people who don't want them in their neighborhood. It's a problem for people who are trying to provide resources. We really need a place for these individuals to go. And so, you know, with the city and with these partners, we're trying to hit every possible aspect. So short-term solutions being a safe outdoor space where we can provide health checks and resources with an ultimate goal of still trying to get these individuals into permanent sustainable housing and programs. So it really has to be hit from every angle. And we've seen this in San Francisco and Portland and even really up in Alaska, in Rochester, New York. And it's been working delightfully and it's been really had a great turnover rate for housing and services for the individuals who have really been struggling during COVID.
Is there a sense of the time frame for this?
Sure. So it is tied to the public health crisis. You know, the major component is that we know that the homeless are 2 times more likely to contract COVID. We've seen a pretty significant asymptomatic homeless population around the nation, which just increases the spread when they're living without social distancing, temperature checks, things of that nature. So, you know, it is exponentially important right now that we are offering those services during COVID. We are looking at, you know, going into the fall, but really, you know, being flexible to what that public health order says. You know, if we see another and second wave of COVID and that public health crisis goes through the winter, then, you know, we are on board to work with the city of Denver and to work with Mayor Hancock to ensure that we do not stop providing service as long as there is a health need for it.
Have the locations for these campgrounds, have they been selected yet?
The, you know, location is difficult for so many reasons. We did look, you know, we had such an unbelievable outpouring of private sites and congregations that would be willing to host. We looked really at a multitude of different sightings. We do, again, currently have a short list. And in the next few weeks, we'll be releasing where the first site would be. What's going to happen is we're going to go ahead and stand up that first site, get all the services functioning, get people fully into it. And then through continued fundraising with Interfaith Alliance and continued planning with Radian, we're going to move forward into our second site. But the goal is really to get the first one up and going as soon as possible while we then continue to try and fill and find out locations for the other two.
How can we make this an issue that everybody cares about, not people who are just directly impacted?
It's something that, as I said before, it's been an issue for 30 years. But now that we're seeing it grow in such significant numbers, I think people are becoming more aware. I think, you know, education is really key. We have lots of, you know, Interfaith Alliance, Colorado Health Foundation. We have a lot of organizations that, you know, would be happy to answer questions and offer educational, you know, forums for people to understand sort of what that looks like. What does it look like to be homeless in Colorado? What resources are available? You know, I think it's important for people to understand that homelessness is very different right now because a lot of those who were homeless would go and utilize, you know, bathroom facilities and hand washing facilities at libraries or, you know, different congregations that would open up for food, and those shut down during COVID. So many people were stranded without service, without places to take care of themselves. And as we see sort of this new turnover of people who are evicted, we're going to see more people sleeping in their cars and we're going to see more people camping out, including families. And so it is vital that we get involved. It is vital that people educate themselves or reach out to organizations who are happy to provide education and really come in and open up that dialogue and conversation. You know, for people who are both very, very concerned and want to provide service, for people who don't want it in their neighborhoods, you know, really, unless we work together as a community, we're not going to find a solution. The most sustainable solution, obviously, is affordable housing and permanent housing. for individuals across our state, no matter who you are. And that is something that, you know, Mayor Hancock mentioned this morning, pushing for a bill and supporting it come November. We see national legislation currently that's trying to push more towards vouchers and changing the way that, you know, low-income housing is built. And that's something that is Colorado, really, we have the power and we've seen, you know, what our movements can do to create systemic change for each other. So, you know, I think moving forward, one of the things that Interfaith of Alliance is really interested in is really opening up that conversation and being open to dialogue about what do we do and how do we move forward. You know, we're a big player with our congregation land campaign all over the state of Colorado in building affordable housing and assisting congregations in utilizing their unused land to open up affordable housing units, temporary housing units, work with Habitat for Humanity. We are happy to and hope to continue to sort of educate Colorado as a whole and see how each individual community comes forward to support those who are unhoused.
Kathleen Van Voorhees is the Congregation Land Campaign Manager with the Interfaith Alliance of Colorado. They're part of the Colorado Village Collaborative, and they are the ones who have proposed the safe outdoor space concept that the City of Denver has now adopted to provide safe outdoor camping facilities for those experiencing homelessness during the COVID-19 pandemic. Well, the 2020 elections are still months away, and despite COVID-19, a group is collecting signatures with the goal of changing the way Boulder selects its mayor. If successful, KGNU's Ros Brown says the question would ask voters to decide if the top official should be elected directly through a ranked choice ballot instead of appointed by the city council.
When the dust settled after last November's Boulder City Council election, many were unhappy with how the mayor was selected, but not because Sam Weaver was chosen by fellow council members to lead them.
This is not a referendum on Sam Weaver. This has actually nothing to do with our current mayor and their performance.
That's Matt Benjamin with Our Mayor, Our Choice, a group collecting signatures to place a measure on the November ballot that would allow voters to choose the mayor.
It's a governmental structure that exists for small towns, and this was just a holdover from when Boulder was just a small little mountain town, you know, 50, 60, 80 years ago. So it wasn't anything functionally wrong. It was just, you know, there was maybe a look at should we evolve to be a little more up to date for a city our size.
Gala Orba is also with the Our Mayor, Our Choice campaign.
And so we're just the largest municipal area in Colorado that doesn't directly elect its own mayor. And it doesn't seem like that person really represents the people if they're not directly elected by the people.
After last November's election, it turned out only Sam Weaver, who was already on the council, had submitted the proper paperwork to be considered for the role of mayor. Newbies seemed caught off guard about how the process worked, and several citizens were upset, believing the top vote-getter should be mayor and deputy mayor. Orba explains that Boulder's municipal government has operated under a strong city manager, weak city council system for more than 100 years.
Where it stands right now, the city manager actually has a lot of power in our council's governmental structure. And so we're looking to shift that to a mayor person so that they can be more directly responsible to the people that elected them.
Both Orba and Benjamin have made unsuccessful bids for city council. They have firsthand experience that when elections are held in odd years, turnout is low. Only about a third of Boulder's registered voters go to the polls. Orba believes ranked choice voting would create better representation.
When you have a single choice winner race, somebody who only gets 35% of the overall vote can end up as the leader. So that's a minority. But because you have so many candidates, that happens all the time. It's just not reflective of the majority of the people's wishes.
But not everyone supports the way the current ballot measure is written. Steve Pomerantz was a city council member for 10 years.
As to having a direct election of mayor, well, Fort Collins does it, Denver does it. I prefer our current system. Now, other people like direct election, which is fine. They can have their opinions. But not this one, not this system. This system is flawed every which way from Sunday.
Flawed, Pomerantz believes, because the complicated ballot measure could result in only 8 instead of 9 council members being seated, creating the possibility of a deadlock on controversial issues. He's also worried ranked choice would mean someone with no previous governing experience could end up as leader.
I would like the mayor to be somebody with experience and immediate experience, meaning I'd like if somebody runs for mayor, I want them to be somebody who's on a council, knows the issues, and says that they want to be the person who runs the meetings and does the agenda setting and all that kind of stuff.
Historically, Boulder City Council candidates are endorsed by groups with differing agendas. For example, pro-growth versus slow growth. Pomerantz worries ranked choice voting could make money a larger factor in local elections.
With our financial constraints, an individual can only contribute $100. Now you've got this strange situation where, let's say there's, as will happen in these races, it'll be one side against the other. So let's say the pro-development folks, they run four candidates, all basically with the same pitch, or five, let's say. So the folks that have a lot of money can only contribute $100 per candidate. Now they can contribute $500. They got five candidates all saying the same thing, basically. And so they can drown out the other side.
Meanwhile, Benjamin, who served on the city's campaign finance and election reform working group, says if our mayor, our choice, is approved by voters, more election reform will be sought.
Electing our mayor through ranked choice voting is the way we see it, is really just phase one of an election reform package that is kind of necessary in Boulder, that we think. I think phase two and phase three are going to be things like fair pay for council. Should council just be that you have the financial means to be on council? And the other is actually evolving our council election system to proportional representation.
The campaign has until August 5th to gather enough signatures for the fall ballot, even while there's still some ambiguity whether city rules or state rules will be followed to determine its validity. For KGNU, I'm Roz Brown.
Time now for Radio Nibbles.
Have a banana, Hannah. Try the salami, Tommy. Give it the gravy, Davy. Everybody eats when they come to my house. Try a tomato plate too.
Radio Nibbles with John Lendorf joining us from his home pantry in Louisville. And we're approaching a very different type of July 4th weekend. But all the same, John, still lots of news to report.
There really is. For one thing, Colorado has, people are a little confused. Colorado has shut down all bars for in-person service through July. But those are just the ones that don't have access to food. Most of Boulder's tasting rooms have access. And then some, like Firm Range Brewery in Lafayette, are brew pubs that actually have kitchens in them. So it doesn't change how the restaurants, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Further up the food chain, certainly when it comes to culinary personnel, there was some big news coming out of Johnson and Wales University in Denver. They're actually going to be closing that campus next year.
It really is a big deal. Johnson and Wales University was the largest and most prestigious culinary school in Colorado. It's going to close next year. They'll let the students that are there finish up before that happens, but they're not accepting any more students. There really are only a couple of much smaller culinary schools, and it affects the chefs and the cooks and all that are fed into food service and restaurants. So it will have an impact in the long run in terms of the quality of help, but it's a complicated time right now in the restaurant business.
We have been seeing layoffs and furloughs in the restaurant industry. There are more layoffs and furloughs at another local organization, this one that supports brewers, Boulder's Brewers Association.
Well, it was kind of not unexpected when the Great American Beer Festival was canceled, and all the other events that they put on, their income was cut. So there have been quite a few layoffs from the Brewers Association, which is sort of in charge of all the independent brewers in the United States.
In another piece of news that could be categorized as a sign of the times, we're seeing a local restaurant, well, certainly local connections, now opening some drive-through facilities in Colorado.
Well, I mean, a lot of people like drive-throughs now because there's no contact. But one company that was not set against that was remember when Chipotle was a local company and they wouldn't do that. Not so much anymore. The company is now opening all sorts of drive-throughs in Colorado, so it's complicated. But there's a lot of other reopenings and things going on in the restaurant business. Very happy to see the Seeds Library Cafe has reopened. It's the cafe inside the library, so it's going to be reopened in the park outside the library's canyon entrance from 11 to 5, Monday to Friday. So that should be pretty cool. And also the Urban Farm Stand, which is in a gas station at Arapahoe and Broadway, is open. I like it because they have hand pies and donuts and flowers. Happy to see the Zolo Grill reopened. It's been rejiggered, and it's going to focus primarily on Colorado ingredients. You know, while we're worrying about so many places that aren't making it, the Rio Grande restaurant has made it to its 34th anniversary.
Have a margarita raised in your honor to wish you happy 34th. Well, there's more food now becoming available online. Take us through this local bakery. They're offering some of the bread flour that they're using online. I suppose that could also be filed under Sign of the Times.
Absolutely, because suddenly everybody wanted to make sourdough bread. But three local companies are going ahead and selling the bread that they use to make their pretty serious breads. Louisville's Izio Bakery has its premium bread flour available. They make great breads. If you go to iziobreads.com, you can find out more about that. Also, Moxie Bread Company and Dry Storage in Boulder both offer their freshly ground, you know, local heirloom flour for your baking needs.
Well, John, what's the best thing that you've tasted lately?
Well, being a guy that I am, I assigned myself to write a story about the best ice cream spots in Colorado, the ice cream palaces. I started with a good one locally, Sweet Cow. And I've got to say, their oatmeal cookie ice cream is like, it's exactly like an ice cream sandwich in a spoonful.
You can read John's story about the best plant-based fast food burgers at his blog. That's johnlendorf.wordpress.com. Bon appétit.